Hey everyone, David here. Severance is back. The Lorehounds are partnering with Properly Howard to bring you in-depth weekly coverage of season 2. Join me, John, Anthony, and Steve as we unpack every twist, theory, and revelation. We've created a dedicated feed just for our Severance coverage. Simply search for Severance Lorehounds in your podcast app, or find the direct link in our link tree. Our weekly episodes dig deep into the show's mysteries, themes, and bigger questions about identity and consciousness that make Severance so compelling. Season Pass and regular community subscribers get ad-free access to our weekly episodes, plus exclusive content like our Supply Closet bonus series, featuring fascinating conversations with experts like the team from Nevermind the Music. We've explored the neuroscience of memory and personality, decoded the hidden meanings in the show's musical themes, and there's much more to come. You'll also get Steve and Anthony's complete season 1 rewatch series. We believe in total transparency with our listeners. And unlike mammalians nurturable, we're happy to share all of our secrets. Find the link for the Severance feed in the show notes below, or search Severance Lorehounds wherever you get your podcasts. Come theorize with us about what's really happening at Lumen.
And remember, the episode you think you're about to hear is merely a reflection of the episode that thinks it's about to be heard.
Hey, y'all. In this supersized sidetrack, we talk about the upcoming 2025 Grammy Awards. Mostly the album of the year. Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Nicole.
And this is Nevermind the Music.
What are we talking about today, Mark?
We are talking about the Grammys, the 67th annual Grammy Awards to be held on Sunday, February 2nd.
Nice.
This was your idea, Nicole.
It was my idea. I have lots of great ideas. You know, I really want to hear your perspective. The 67th Grammys. Do you remember the first Grammys?
I am 67 years old. When was it? What's the math there? That was...
No, I don't
so
know.
So the 60s? Late 50s?
Yeah, like how did they decide? We should do a Grammy.
That's a long time ago. So what's your relationship with the Grammys? Do you watch them, follow it?
I watch them. I'll watch it again this year, but I haven't for the past couple of years because I find them, as I get older, to be less and less relatable. Like, as I'm watching it, I'm like, who are these people? Like, who is Ice Spice? Like, I'm not familiar. But this year, I'm going to watch it because I've been listening to more pop music. So I feel like I have a better sense. And, like, obviously... My thorough prep for this podcast has prepared me.
So when you said, hey, Mark, we should do a Grammys episode, me listening to all the albums for all the nominees for Album of the Year, which we are in the realm where there are 8 per year.
Oh, gosh.
Just a decade ago, there were only like 4 or 5. This is by far the most attention I've played to the Grammys in my entire life.
Well, thanks for doing all that work.
Yeah. Anything for the podcast and for a friend. But I don't, generally speaking, this has not been my jam, right?
No.
Even when I was more immersed in pop music, I was always a little bit off of, I think, what the Grammys would necessarily be focused on.
Because of like the corporate machine?
I'd love to say that it had everything to do with philosophy. It was just, you know, like the music, like in high school, it wouldn't have been the Album of the Year nominees. It would have been the rock nominees, and I would have been like, oh, well, those aren't the best bands, like that kind of thing.
Right.
And then, like, I don't know, it never felt like it was for me. And now that I'm a professional musician, it's definitely not for me, but I can appreciate a good pop album a lot more now than in a lot of phases in my life.
Sure.
So it's been fun.
So today we are doing the Nevermind the Music 67th Grammys Album of the Year edition.
That's right. I want to focus on Album of the Year. I do think we can spare, once we talk about them, spare a few minutes to talk about Song of the Year and Record of the Year.
Ooh, fun.
Because we'll have talked about all those artists already.
Right. It's like easy. A lot of frequent flyers.
That's absolutely right. So
like old.
We're going to talk about a few aspects here that I've always been thinking of, but I want to say the album of the year nominees for the 2025 Grammys have been randomized by the good people at random.org.
Oh.
So the order.
Shout out.
We're not starting with Andre 3000 because of alphabetical reasons or because of flute priority or anything like that. I wanted to note a few things. Of the 8 nominees, 2 are men and 6 are women.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to unpack that much because I think that has a lot more to do with, honestly, this. There aren't any bands or groups or anything. No duos. Every single thing is a solo artist.
Wow.
And that's really interesting to me. I actually looked this up because, of course, I did not look up, has it been woman dominated in the last few years or anything? But what I did look up is how many bands or groups, right? Mm. It doesn't have to be a band per se, have been nominated in the past 5 years for Album of the Year.
Oh, that's interesting.
So this year, obviously, 0.
Mm.
Back in 2020, Vampire Weekend's Father of the Bride, Bon Iver, I.I., sort of a band. It's kind of a solo artist with people playing with him.
But it's all him.
2021, Black Pumas, their self-titled record. Coldplay, Everyday Life.
Mm.
I think that's an odd album. I don't know if you know that album. It's
not really.
Kind of black sheep among that band. Haim, Women in Music Part 3. That's a good one. 2022, none.
None.
No groups. 2023, another Coldplay album that isn't one of their best. Music of the Spheres.
Mm.
ABBA, Voyage. Did you know ABBA has an awesome, apparently, album from 2023? No idea.
I'm just learning now.
Yeah.
Right? Way to go.
ABBA, maybe on the list of bands we should
we'll
talk
add
about.
It.
2024, Boy Genius, the record.
I like Boy Genius.
2025, none.
None.
So that is 8 out of 40 nominees.
That's
over that
wild,
period.
Right? I wonder, like, why? What's up, Grammy?
So if you'd asked me in the 2010s, because by the way, okay, in 2010, there were 2 out of 5. Dave Matthews and the Black Eyed Peas, right?
What was the 2010 Dave Matthews album?
I don't know. Good question,
Buses
right? The repressing of Under the Table and Dreaming? I don't know.
2010. Yeah.
You tell me.
It must have been like the Grugrux King, maybe.
I don't know. I don't know.
Whatever.
Look that up.
Cut
and
it
then
out.
In 2000, 4 out of 5 were groups.
Wow.
Santana, which, you know, solo we got, but it's a band. TLC.
Mm-hmm.
Dixie Chicks, the Chicks.
The Chicks.
I love how they're like, out of respect, we're going to take out the Southern reference, but leave the misogynist sort of term.
Right.
The Chicks. And then
don't talk shit about the Dixie Chicks.
Yeah, they're awesome.
They're awesome.
And which,
oh, the Chicks. Sorry.
Which I did not know at the time, but now know.
Yes.
That they were awesome. And then Backstreet Boys. 4 out of 5 of the nominees in 2000. So if you'd asked me 10 years ago, why has this happened? It's like, well, the rise of hip hop. And there are hip hop groups, you know, Black Eyed Peas, Outkast or whatever. Outkast is one album of the year, 1 year. Hip hop tends to be solo artists, so it displaced rock. But the truth is, hip hop isn't even dominant anymore.
Right.
It's just sort of solo artist pop music tending to be female artists, but not especially, not only.
Mm.
That it's really interesting, like what happened to groups.
And like, not only that, like, yeah, it is solo female artists and this is going to get me in trouble, but they're all kind of the same. Like,
let's go. We'll go there. We'll go there. Okay. So some stupid stuff to make this fun.
Okay.
Other podcasts have inspired this. I looked up the betting odds for each of these albums.
Cool.
And I'll tell you the odds when we talk about an album and you can tell me if you think the odds are good or not. Like, would you buy or sell? Like, does this work? So. Do you know how to... I'm not a gambler.
I'm not much of a gambler.
So to remind us and the listener, if something's set at negative 500, that means it's a favorite. So like, that means you would have to spend $500 to make 100 in profit.
Okay.
So if I say Andre 3000's album is a negative 500, that means he's the favorite to win. And it's going to be inefficient to win any money, right?
He's not, though.
He will not be.
No.
Spoiler.
I mean, we all know who.
Plus 500 means if you spend 100, you make 500.
So I'd say, so like, Andre 3000 is probably like a plus 600.
We'll get there.
Okay. I'm
so
just saying, like,
every
for
time
clarity.
We reach one, you tell me what you think.
Okay.
So the order happens, the random.org happened to bring us to Andre 3000's New Blue Sun came out in 2023.
Nice.
Andre won as a part of Outkast in 2004 with Speaker Box, The Love Below, which we've already talked about on a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You're a flute player. What did you think of this album?
I liked it a lot. I liked it.
Okay.
I thought it was like vibey. I listened to it in the background a lot. Like it kind of just like floated behind my existence when I listened to it. I didn't really like focus on it.
Did you look up what this was before you started listening? Or
no,
were you just...
I just like put it on Spotify. I put like a Grammy album of the year playlist on Spotify and like listened to it. And every time this song came, a song from this album came up, I was like, oh, I like that. So
you didn't listen to it as one long thing.
I didn't, but I want to go back and do it. You did, of course.
I listened to all of these as one long things, except I had to break up Tortured Poets into two because it's too long.
It's huge. Lots of skips. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
We'll come back to it. So eventually I stopped waiting for hip hop.
Yeah.
But what I never stopped waiting for was chaos on this album. I was surprised by how not chaotic it was and how not as eclectic. First of all, listeners who haven't heard this, this is basically like ambient jazz flute.
I loved it. I really did.
Yeah.
I did.
Good.
You did.
I kind of didn't know what to think. So by the way, flute and MIDI flute, which I appreciate. He's playing digital wind instruments. I didn't know Andre was a flute player. I think that's awesome. We're going to talk about Lizzo later in this season. We like a good hip hop artist who also plays some flute.
Surprising.
This felt a lot like an album. Do you know Music for Airports by Brian Eno?
Yeah.
It felt like that with a little more jazz kind of vibe in it. More improvisational. There's only 8 tracks. They're between 3 and 17 minutes long.
Yeah, weird.
Honestly, I'll be honest. It was kind of hard for me to get this album. And I'll say why. Really long pieces of music for me, which I've listened to a lot of. I've written really long pieces of music. But, you know, whether it's classical music or jazz, I usually need one of two things. Formal contrast. So like a classical symphony where there's the middle section that changes key or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or a big prog rock multi-sectional song where there's like a crazy guitar solo in the middle and like time signature changes. Like some kind of change. Like in an album where you go from song to song and things change, right?
There wasn't enough rise and fall on this album.
Not
for
really.
You.
Or, but not every piece has that.
Mm.
Later in the season, listeners, most likely this hasn't aired yet. We have an episode where I talk about minimalism and there's just this repeating loops and stuff in this style of music. But there's something to follow, usually like a process or some kind of a pattern. And this was super long music that also doesn't have function. Like if you could play a dance beat for an hour and if I'm dancing to it, it's probably fine or on a run.
Sure.
But it's like I'm on a run and it's there to pep me up. Like this was didn't have a contrast, didn't have something for me to follow. Like I enjoyed what I was listening to, but it felt kind of backgroundy to me. I don't know.
That's why I liked it. I liked lo-fi screensaver music, I call it.
But is that album of the year?
I know, it's weird.
And listeners, you've heard us talk about Outkast. We're fans.
Sure.
I like Andre 3000 a lot.
I wonder why this was nominated.
I can't help but feel like it's people trying to show off a little bit.
But maybe there's something we don't get.
I've been in grad school classes where I was acting like I really liked a piece that I only sort of liked because everybody else liked it. And it was really important that I be a part of the group.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this is a bad album. I'm not saying at all that it's a bad album. I just don't quite understand why that it would necessarily be one of the best albums of the year. But like, I totally get Andre 3000's perspective 100%. The first track is literally called Swear. I really wanted to make a rap album, but this is literally the way the wind blew me this time.
I love that.
I completely understand. He set out to do something that his fans would like and decided to make something that other types of fans would probably like. And I can't fault them for that. I hate kind of sounding so negative on it, but I feel just hard to see why this is representative of the best thing. Maybe I need to listen to it again.
Yeah.
Do you think this converts more Outkast fans to jazz or more jazz fans to hip hop? Meaning like then they'll go listen to Speaker Box or...
Well, they're
going to
be upset if they listen to this and then go listen to Speaker Box.
Do you think hardcore Outkast fans are upset?
No. I think hardcore Outkast fans are like, finally... He's showing his like musical talents.
Wow. That's interesting.
And that's why I think it was had a nod for album of the year because it's like when Lizzo comes and plays the classical flute. You're like, oh, they can do that too.
There's something awesome about the diversity of his skill set.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally right.
And I think they're honoring that.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. So it's not performative a nomination. It's like a specific honor to Andre. And yeah, I can get behind
that.
Yeah,
like you're an actual musician.
Yeah, I can get... Yeah. Right. Which the idea that you would have to prove that for somebody like him is insane. But mm-hmm. I get it also. You're not just a part of a hip hop duo. You're a MIDI flute player. MIDI right. meaning like computer music flute player. By the way, that song with the really long title, that's the longest song to ever chart on wow. the Hot 100. That is crazy that it charted. It's 10 minutes long, by the way.
Wow.
But I would say it's not a song at all.
What is
it? It's a piece of music. It's a piece of improvisatory. Like a song yeah. has... singing a song
chorus,
has a form
pre-chorus,
it has a like, form that is a song sure. form right so huh. want to talk through track highlights for me I really liked Bipolar Disorder's Daughter Wears $3,000 R symbol shirt embroidered. Why? Because it had actual contrast. There's a big swell in the middle mm. and some cool synth arpeggios. Here's a quick sample.
So it sounds like if I lived in the Star Wars universe and was going to get a massage, this is what would be playing at the massage therapist's office at the spa. Star Wars spa music. That's what it should have been called.
Maybe that's the next song. Other highlights for me, Gandhi, Dalai Lama, your Lord and Savior, JC, slash Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, and John Wayne Gacy.
Like, is he okay, you think?
No idea.
Like, is he all right?
But that tune was sort of post-minimalist and had very, like, cool piano solo. So this album, obviously, it's not my favorite of these this bunch. And I feel bummed that I felt that. When I was kind of excited by the idea of it. But then when I listened to it, I wanted a little more craziness out of Andre. A little bit more.
Yeah. See, I think the thing is, I listened to it for, like, 10 minutes and you listened to it for
the whole thing
an
straight.
Hour right. or more. And I think that that's where you went wrong. Because for 10 minutes, it's great.
So this album is plus 900 on the betting market,
yeah,
which
okay.
puts it tied for fifth with fifth out of eighth with three other albums. So slots 5, 6, and 7. You buying or selling? You like those odds?
He's not going to win.
So you would not spend 100 to make 900?
No.
And I also agree he's not going to win. Yeah.
No. All right. I can't wait to see what he wears, though.
Oh, yeah.
He's probably got a fun outfit.
Yeah, see, that's another dimension of the Grammys that
I
never
like
really
my favorite
follow.
Part.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's what I'm here for.
Second one determined by thegodsatrandom.org, Chapel Roan, The Rise and Fall of the Midwest Princess 2023.
Chapel
I didn't know
Roan,
this
babe.
At all. I had heard just a little bit of her just sort of around a little bit.
Yeah.
But really, she's someone I'd heard of in the last year, but never had experienced. What about you?
You know, I do have my finger on the pulse quite a bit more.
Yeah.
But the college kids have been talking about this for a while. The queer community has been talking about this for a while, about Chapel Roan. And I had heard of her maybe 2 years ago, before she was big.
Aside from some random stuff that I've maybe heard, this is my only experience. I actually really liked this.
Yeah.
I really liked this. This is the second album we're talking about, but it was probably the seventh I had listened to out of my Grammy deep dive. And I felt like it was kind of a breath of fresh air. It was stylistically diverse, but kind of less pretentious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this doesn't have like a big suite at the end. Like, I don't know how many of the albums you listen to straight through, but so many of these albums have like these 7-minute complex things, which I'm a sucker for.
Yeah.
I love that kind of thing, but it was kind of a breath of fresh air to just have an album with several kind of adjacent but different stylistic vibes. It was kind of goofy because there's obviously a lot of, and you could maybe teach me a lot more about this, but there was a lot of camp in there. There's a lot of influence from club culture, but also drag culture
and
kind of shows.
She's referenced a lot being like influenced by drag culture and club culture for sure. She's definitely really has strong representation, strong allegiance to the queer community. So yeah, you're picking up notes of that, and it's really obtuse, like especially with her costuming and how she like performs on stage. Like it is a very much a drag vibe. And she talks about that pretty explicitly, that's what her influences are.
But what's so kind of interesting about it, and this is one of my track highlights too, is if we listen to something like what's it called, super graphic ultra modern girl. When I first listened to that, before I, the way I did all these, some, obviously I know Taylor Swift already and I'd heard that album before, but I'd never heard this. I listened to it and then looked up what's the deal with this album, who's on it, that kind of thing. And first time I listened to it, like knowing her rough age demographic, I'm like, this sounds like someone who's influenced by Madonna by being influenced by Lady Gaga, which means she's influenced by drag culture and Euro dance and New York clubs from the 80s. But I think she might just actually be influenced by the Euro clubs and 80s drag clubs in New York City.
Like a direct connection.
It might be a direct, but it's also, she's paying homage to all that stuff too. So it's, it worked. And some of it's, look, there's like orchestra sounds at the beginning of Feminine Nomenon at the beginning of the album, but I'm like, oh boy, here we go again. More pretentious stuff, but it didn't.
It's not,
it,
like, because she wrote this before she was really famous. Like this was her breakout album for the most part. She might have had another album before this, but this was the first one that like kind of entered the ether, right? And I think it reads in the music. Like you listen to some of the other albums that are nominated by very much more established artists, and they do feel performative in a way that this doesn't. And this feels, raw. She's like a young ingenue. I hope she wins.
But she has a voice. And I don't mean her singing voice. She's obviously got a good singing voice, but she's a good songwriter, and I can tell that it's a person. It feels like a solo album, whereas there's obviously collaborators. There's collaborators on all these albums, but this feels like it's put through her filter, and I'm really excited to see where she goes, because it's like there's some serious emotional stuff, but then some goofiness kind of, but not, you know, like Naked in Manhattan or Hot to Go, these songs are just up against the point at which it might be annoying, but they're not.
They're not. They're good. And it's really interesting, you know, her as a person, she does separate herself from the character she plays when she's performing. And when she talks about her art, she does say, like, I am costuming. I am putting on this mask. Who I am in real life is not. I can't be Chapel Roan every day. Some days I just have to be me. And she's been she's gotten a lot of heat from a lot of people about setting a real boundary with her fans and saying, hey, I don't want to sign autographs. Like, don't, sometimes I need downtime. I need my own mental space. It's better for my mental health to like not have you come at me. Like, I need privacy. And a lot of her fans are like, well, no, you're in this world.
Too late.
It's too late.
Yeah.
So she, this past year, she like canceled a couple stops on her tour saying like, I'm just not mentally in a space to perform. I can't be Chapel today. And
good
her fans were like, well, well, that's the vibe, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think so, too. But a lot of her fans or people in the industry are like, no, like, this is what you sign up for.
Yeah.
So
they're both right.
Yeah.
They're really both right.
So she's really speaking to her generation in prioritizing her mental health needs over a lot of other things in a way that people our age don't do, or even people ahead of us generationally don't do. Like, the Madonna doesn't do that, right?
Yeah.
But she's saying, like, no, sometimes I need to take a break. And, like, if you don't like it, then screw.
Yeah. All right. Track highlights for me. Red Wine Supernova, Feminine Nomenon. Blah, blah, I can't say it. Those are both bangers. Coffee is, like, the first change of pace. That's sort of, like, more emotional. Probably my favorite song is Mike Kink's Karma on this album. And it kind of, like, I think it just sort of weirdly, given we haven't been talking about this, it kind of reminds me of some of my favorite Taylor Swift songs, and not because of the whole Karma is my boyfriend, like lyric thing, but I'm thinking more like the way her voice leaps up and down in like songs like Style or All You Had to Do Was Stay. Like, if you know what I'm talking about, listen to Chapel.
I was like,
here.
Those are Taylor Swift songs, but
that's
you're
what
talking.
I'm saying.
Okay.
She's doing that thing. Listen here. People say I'm jealous, but my kink is watching you. She's kind of like doing the thing that happens in some of my favorite Taylor Swift songs.
Sure.
In this kind of synth pop vibe. Guilty Pleasure, I already mentioned, it's a closer that isn't pretentious. It's a fun closer. It kind of reminds me of, we think of classical symphonies and sonatas and stuff as pretentious, but the last movement is usually the banger, crowd pleaser, pop hook. Like, the thing that you want people to leave is not the introspective, thoughtful thing. It's the catchy, singable thing. And she has that kind of album closer, which isn't necessarily how I would even do an album, but it was a breath of fresh air
it's
after
fun.
All of
it's
these
just her music's
albums.
Just fun
yeah, sure is.
And funny in a campy way that also like talks about real stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's not just a cartoonish presentation. Like the lyrics are powerful and resonant in a way that has depth and nuance. Unlike some of the other artists on this album of the year list.
So I've been noting lyrical highlights, and I think hers, this is really interesting. Most of the song I just played, I love the lyrics to My Kink is Karma, but so much of this album is from a perspective that is not directly relatable to me. And the most relatable moment lyrically is from the song Picture You, because I'm seeing like myself through someone's eyes, and it's like, oh boy, because I can relate to that. She says, so tell me now all your perversions. Am I doing research in a miniskirt in a library in your hometown? And I'm just like struck by how like she's talking about someone else's fantasy. And it's like, wow, they are weird. Like someone fantasizing. That is something. I'm not saying her in a miniskirt in a library. But that's the way the brain works. And it's like, I'm like on a run listening to this. And I'm like, I feel like seen and kind of bummed out also at the same time by this like... this song that is, she's, I don't know, the weirdness of the human mind she captured in that line.
Yeah,
for me.
I think she has a real innate understanding of like people's thought processes and a really good talent for putting the things that we often think about, like putting them into words that are lyrically interesting. Like I'm a big fan of this album. I wonder what her Vegas odds are. I don't think she has odds of winning, but I hope that she does.
She is plus 550. Which is pretty substantial underdog, but she is tied for second, which tells you there is a clear favorite. So you spend 100, you'll win 550.
I bet.
Are you buying? You're buying?
I
might, just for the math of it all. I won't, but in theory.
Sure, the Grammys need a shake up.
I don't know that, I don't think she's going to win, but I think that's good value because this is a really good album.
It's a good album, and I
can't
believe
wait to hear
in
more.
Her. And I, you know, I think that... Oh, this is controversial, but I think a lot of the other albums here are very formulaic and this one isn't. And like Andre 3000's isn't either, but this one's better.
No, not at all. Yeah. The Jacob Collier, Jesse Volume 4. Jesse Volume 1 was nominated in 2021, did not win. So do you know Jacob Collier?
Not at all.
Not at all. So I knew Jacob Collier. This is the first album of his I've listened to, but going back probably a decade ago, I've been seeing him do YouTube stuff.
So, what's like a song that I would know from this person?
I don't even know because all that my experience to him, like he would do a random jazzed out cover of something during COVID times, or like him as some 25-year-old explaining music theory for 5 minutes in a video. Like his YouTube channel for years has been like a mix between really kind of complicated cover songs and again like instructional videos and stuff.
Weird.
Even when he was like 18 years old, he was doing this stuff. He's a few years younger than us, like peak millennial generation kind of YouTube personality, but he has albums and stuff, but I'd never really, I almost didn't know that he was a, I thought of him as the guy who's guesting on other albums and stuff like that. He's some kind of a virtuoso, really. Like he was this wunderkind, like, how can he play like that when he's like 18 or whatever?
Huh. Well, good for him.
So I don't know what his big hits. There are Jesse volumes 1 through 3, also albums.
Who's Jesse?
I don't know.
So my
Maybe
questions.
We need to listen to the whole thing. I've always found his voice kind of strange.
Mm.
Like, it's very beautiful, but it's also sort of emotionless on some level.
Okay.
With a few exceptions on this album, I think that's still true. My thing with him... Not to fast forward too much to like my big problem, like, cause I like this album actually, but he's kind of overproduced because I know that he's this super good musician. It sounds like there's too much pitch correction, a little too much effects on his voice. And I don't think he needs it cause I know he can do this stuff. And look, listeners, you haven't heard it yet, but we've got a T-Pain episode where we talk about auto-tune and stuff like that. I am not at all a hater about it. There's just something about it. This album, the production feels a little off to me. What did you? I can talk about the songwriting and all that too, but what do you think about this album?
I'm not super familiar with it. I heard a couple songs from it, and they didn't really stand out to me. I was like, "What is? I need to know more about this guy." Because what you're saying, paints a bigger picture than I think I have representation of. Can we listen to some of his stuff?
Sure. So, like, I don't know that my highlights are reflective at all of what the famous songs on this are.
Hmm.
Like, for me, there are a couple that are so different. And I think this album does, aside from it being another, the second of two men in this list, it has diversity in style that maybe some of the other albums okay. that maybe you're bored with don't. So here's one end. This is a song called Summer Rain. That's a really beautiful sort of folky song with Chris Thiele from Nickel Creek and Punch Brothers playing mandolin.
You love Nickel Creek.
I love Nickel Creek. They will keep coming up until you shut me up. There are tons of collabs on this album.
That's so cool.
Michael McDonald literally sings on this. Michael McDonald, another guy we're going to talk about in an episode.
I'm in.
Who is sort of like the emotional version of Jacob Collier's voice. Like he's kind of got the dark voice like
weird.
Jacob. Except it's super
person?
Passionate with Michael. Brandi Carlile, Camilo, Shawn Mendes, John Legend, Tori Kelly, Chris Martin. No, not the relief pitcher from the Boston Red Sox.
Oh.
From Coldplay, returning the favor because Jacob Collier guests on their most
Maybe
recent
album.
Maybe
that's why this was nominated, because it's like a We Are the World moment.
Because all the people who vote on nominees are on this album.
But maybe.
So this is an example of one with a feature. This is Summer Rain.
Without you.
Compare that to like the arena rock of, well, I don't know. It's got three L's. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Oh. I like that better.
There's some cool songs on this. She Puts Sunshine's got like pop. It's like a pop groove, but all this vocal layering at the end. Wherever I Go is the one with Michael McDonald. Sounds like 70s yacht rock.
Mm-hmm.
Mi Corazon is the one with Camilo. Sounds like Spanish pop over layered on top of like 80s Minneapolis style Prince synth
Weird.
Bass and stuff.
All right.
And
He's
then there's
like
a really good
all.
Cover of Bridge Over Troubled Water with Tori Kelly and John Legend like going nuts with Jacob Collier doing the choir. Like,
what?
There's a lot of, so you didn't hear all these songs.
No,
like,
I need to look at, you do more prep than me.
That's the vibe, right?
That's the vibe.
Even though this was your idea. So, yeah. And of course it ends with like a two-part suite of kind of a complicated structure called Box of Stars and, you know, leads into a choir sort of ending.
I kind of love,
I don't know.
I don't know. It's weird. It seems like the music industry patting itself on the back kind of with this nomination, because there's so many people involved in this album. I think that a lot of the other artists are really in their lane and he's not. He's in all the lanes. And I think if that we're talking about what makes an album of the year, it's something that does it all. And this is great musically and kind of does it all.
Yeah,
it won't win.
I know that. I think he's some kind of a version of a musical genius, if we can use that word. I think it's really good. I will say, I don't have any lyrical highlights to write down.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably my main ding. Maybe it doesn't quite hang together emotionally.
I don't really like his voice. Oof. Hot take.
It's sort of, I think it is interesting when you've got, like, a song with a feature, and he's got a verse, and then some, like, super famous, amazing person comes in on the next verse with a very emotional voice.
Yeah,
I feel like he benefits from having other people, but also it kind of, they become the star. It's kind of a strange thing. Yeah.
And maybe like Jacob Collier, he's a musical genius, but like admittedly not the best vocalist.
Well, there's a space for like, okay, so like Miles Davis is an example, super famous jazz trumpet player, but really what he is a band leader. Like
right.
he doesn't have the best solo in his song. The best solo would be like John Coltrane, a member of his band, but Miles Davis is the guy who like arranged the band and masterminded all, right? So that's okay, right? I'm not the best person in my band, but I'm kind of masterminding at least certain aspects of the music, right? So this album is plus 2,000.
Oh, yeah.
So really good value if you want to spend $100. You'll get 2,000 if you win. I do not think this will win. This is the last place of the Vegas
He's
odds.
He's just like happy to be there, right? He's just like...
I mean, he's been nominated before.
Yeah.
I think this is good. I think it doesn't quite hang together fully enough to win. I think there's a lot of good stuff on this. I think this is probably one where I will come back to certain songs again and again, but maybe won't listen to the whole album all the time. Okay, next one, big one, Beyoncé's Cowboy Carter. She has been nominated four times.
Yeah, never won.
I Am Sasha Fierce, nominated in 2010. Beyoncé, nominated in 2015. Lemonade, nominated in 2017. Renaissance, nominated in 2023, and has never won.
And Jay-Z called them out. He won like the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award, whatever they call it, last year. And he was like, I need to shout out to my wife that has won every award except album
for
of the year.
Big one.
And he like called them racist.
Despite those albums. Well, because what the hell?
What the hell?
What the hell?
So, I think she's going to win this year.
So we'll get to those odds because okay. She's not.
We all know who is.
Well, but she's not the favorite in Vegas. So this album also has a crazy number of collaborators.
Yeah,
right?
It
including
does.
Some ones that maybe would be a surprise just on paper. Right. Dolly Parton, Willie Nelson, Miley Cyrus, our first Post Malone sighting of the day. Rhiannon Giddens plays the like her like old school 1800s banjo on Texas Hold'em. Do you know Rhiannon Giddens?
She's a great banjo player.
Just like folky kind of black roots music. Just
well,
really great.
Well, she set out to like kind of reclaim, Beyonce set out to kind of reclaim country from a black perspective. Because if you think of like the original country musicians, they were black people.
Well, it comes from blues, right?
Yeah.
So and in that way, it's kind of a sequel to Renaissance, which is like black roots of, I guess, dance music, right? This one honors more the Americana, right? The podcast Switched on Pop has a great episode about this. And they highlight how, is it 16 Carriages has the work song like clink, clink going on in the background. Like she's honoring that whole legacy and the whole sequel thing. It's kind of, did you look at the track titles? They all have that gimmick of the two. So like when she says two hands to heaven, it's Roman numeral two. So this whole thing is a sequel album. So what do you think? Did you like this album?
I liked it, but I didn't love it.
Interesting.
I like Beyonce quite a bit. I just I'm going to get into trouble saying, is this a safe space? Like, can I say how I feel?
This is not a safe space,
okay, cool.
But you can say how you feel.
Oh, great. So
this
just
is this is a brave space.
I'm
going to
feel
is.
Brave and say, I liked it. I didn't love it. I thought at times it felt very gimmicky.
Doing the country?
Yes.
Okay.
That's how I felt. Like the Post Malone song about the Levi's, like I didn't.
So that's interesting you mentioned that one because
I love it.
Shout out to the episode of One Hit Thunder I was on where the hosts, two co-hosts, Matt and Chris, were talking so much crap about bro country. I feel like there's a few songs on this that are either spoofs or like legitimate homages to kind of a bro country. I think even Texas Hold'em, which is a really cool song, feels
it's a really cool song.
Like there's like almost an homage that I can't tell if she's insulting the style or loves
like that's
it.
How I feel.
And I think
like
the Levi's stuff, it's similar, right? Because there's kind of there's like certain songs that are so serious and certain songs that have that kind of like, let's get drunk at a party, bro country kind of, because I don't know, modern country is different. She's got all these legends on this album. She's got Dolly in there. She's got Willie Nelson doing his guest spot. Country has changed in that since then, you know?
Yeah. I understand it. I get what you're saying. Like at sometimes I couldn't tell when I say gimmicky, I'm going to say that a different way. I had a hard time gauging how genuine she was towards the genre of country music or how much she was trying to poke at it. Does that make more sense?
I think both. I think she's poking at it with Levi's jeans, but
right.
She is honoring it with 16 Carriages or with some of these songs.
Because lyrically, they feel like R&B. Like, if you just looked at the lyrics as poetry for Levi's jeans, it like you could easily spin that into an R&B song. But it's just I don't know. I think I didn't get it. I think I didn't get Cowboy Carter.
Yeah. So I think this is maybe our first point of major. we disagreed on a bit on Andre, but I think you also didn't listen to the whole album of the Andre 3000.
Well, for 10 minutes, it was good.
Because I liked every 10-minute chunk of that album, but didn't really like it as a hanging together. I think some of these, first of all, the influences are all over the place, right? Mm-hmm. So Yeah Yeah starts out with like the Nancy Sinatra Boots Were Made for Walking sample, and then goes in. Do you know Janelle Monáe's tune Tightrope?
Yeah.
Sounds just like that to me. And then it goes into an interpolation of Good Vibrations from the Beach Boys. So it's like, whoa, what is she doing? There's a snippet of Caro Mio Ben, the sort of everybody, including my like voice lessons teacher, makes you learn it. It's by Tommaso Giordani, Italian art song, in the song Daughter, but it's in minor. It's kind of like, whoa. She covers. The covers are, I think, super inspired. So like Blackbird, Paul McCartney, she doesn't do some crazy reinterpretation. It's just literally playing Paul McCartney's guitar track with the toe tapping as a sample. And then she does what she does to it. You know, she adds beautiful harmonies. Jolene, the Dolly
tune. That was beautiful too.
The original version is this vocal powerhouse. Does she try to do it like that, but better? No, but she does her own version of a vocal powerhouse for it. So it's kind of all over the place, but I feel like some of these songs really worked emotionally. I think the sequence going from Riverdance to Two Hands to Heaven is just beautiful. And that feels like a earnest mix. The Riverdance tune is like this plucking kind of hillbilly-ish sounding guitar with a house beat.
Bounce on that shit, dance, dance. Bounce on that shit, dance, dance. Bounce on that shit, dance, dance. Bounce on that shit, no hands.
And it seems so random, but it really works. I think some of the songs have this beautiful haunting. Just for Fun, Alligator Tears, I noted those ones.
You and those alligator tears. You, something about those tears of yours. How does it feel to be adored? Sunrise.
I'm a sucker for that kind of open tuning guitar Americana. There's a couple good pop songs. You know, of course the singles are good. Texas Hold'em, Bodyguard's a good pop song.
Yeah,
this is Two Hands to Heaven.
Rhinestones and diamonds both shine in the light. Two hands to heaven, coyotes run wild. God only knows why though. God only knows why though. Two hands to heaven, I pray priest forgive my soul. Lovely day.
Yeah, that's really nice.
This worked for me.
I think I need to listen to it like 10 more times.
I think there's a lot there. Also, I think there's a lot of songs, and I think we'll talk about double albums later on, but it's kind of almost double album territory.
Sure.
Where you can be forgiven for listening to it and going, did this need to be on it? It's long. It's like 75 minutes long or something like that. There's some good lyrical moments in Riverdance. I died and someone brought me back to life, but never to my senses. Like that
that's
line.
Beautiful.
And that line happens a lot in that it just keeps like looping around. And this album for me, this is plus 700. So it's in sole possession of fourth place. I think that's undervalued. I think that's, I'm buying on this album.
I would buy on that too.
I think the fact that she hasn't won album of the year, I think they have to give this to her. I don't know that they will, but I know it's not your favorite of this list, but I feel like I've complicated thoughts on the Taylor offering this year.
Sure. I mean, I hope
this is good.
Beyonce wins. I think she's deserved of this award. I know that
you'd rather it have been for Lemonade or something
that. Lemonade was great.
What and won like, that year? That's what I want to know.
Was that the year that Kanye took it from Taylor? No, that was much earlier.
Kanye took it from Taylor.
When Taylor won,
you got
and
that
Kanye
backward.
Went.
You mean when Kanye started the feud? No, that's, when he went, I think, 1989. That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Let me look it up.
The other thing about Beyonce is her husband is really like Puff Daddy adjacent right now. And I'm wondering if the Grammy committee wants to stay away from that. Or if they're really, I think of the politics behind it all. I'm wondering if the Grammy committee is being pressured to give Beyonce the award so it works for Jay-Z's PR a little bit better. Because he's in like a kind of PR hot water with the Puff Daddy situation.
By the way, Adele 25 won album of the year that year.
I also think that when you talk about album of the year, right? This album is, this album does something that I really just like generally, and that's holding two ideas at once, right? Like two kind of conflicting ideas at once and finding the peace in between them. I just love that just as part of the human experience, and I think that this represents it well in like a really lovely way. So I don't know, I hope
it feels of the year.
It does feel of the year.
Of the year.
Yeah, and if that's like what we're trying to do, I think that there's something to honor in that.
We'll see where I end up later in this conversation. We got a few more albums left, but this one is the one I hope wins. I hope she wins.
Cool.
Sabrina Carpenter's Short and Sweet. I had never heard Sabrina Carpenter before this.
What did you think?
I know she's had a few albums, but they just completely under the radar. I actually like this.
Yeah.
I think this one, God, I don't want to sound mean because there's some of these songs I really like on this. This one feels a little generic for this set. It feels a little bit like 2024 pop singer-songwriter. Yeah. And I don't want to damn it with faint praise or by saying that because it's good. And some of the songs are really good. Taste, Good Graces, Coincidence, Bed Chem, Espresso. Well, I mean, listen, Espresso, this is so cool. Think about me. You know that I'm a sucker for the like new disco sort of sound.
It's just so you're very endearing to me. They're like, check this song out. Like I've heard this song
a million times. This one and I guess what's the other one that's a big
Taste, Bedchem, Feather was on a different album. But
this is all new to me, man. How did I not know this?
Well, you don't have a 10-year-old daughter.
I have a 10-year-old son and a 7-year-old daughter.
You're not there
so she's
yet.
Not there yet.
Thank goodness.
I think the influences of this album are kind of all over the place. Like Good Graces feels sort of like Reputation era Taylor mixed with Lizzo to me. Coincidence sounds sort of like Joni Mitchell to me. Bed Chem sounds like Ariana Grande to me with like the high range. Espresso sounds sort of like Dua Lipa-ish to me. Like she's kind of all over the place.
Do you know who produced this album?
I did not get that far or I forgot.
Jack Antonoff produced this album.
Of course, who we're going to hear more of later with Tay Tay. So I think also like some good just pop, like this song Juno, which incidentally references the 2007 movie, which members of my family were involved in. So shout out to that movie.
What? Just might let you lock me down tonight. One of me is cute, but two of them, give it to me, baby. You make me want to make you fall in love.
That part there with the you make me want to fall in love, it's just so cool as a hook. Spoiler, this isn't like my favorite album this is, but I liked it. It was really enjoyable. It's also not super long.
Yeah.
It's not one that's like overly pretentious.
Yeah, it's definitely not.
Where are you at with this one?
I liked it at first.
Okay.
So I listened to this a lot because I just am around her demographic, which is young girls, in my opinion. I think, first of all, we need to say Sabrina Carpenter started out as a Disney kid and like rose up. So you're seeing references to like Ariana Grande. Like, yeah, like it's that flavor of person.
Sure.
And her first couple albums were better than this, I think, but didn't have the commercial success. And I think she aligned with Taylor Swift and got embedded with her production team. And they took her lyrics and produced them, made them a hit. Like the stuff that you like is the production of it, right?
It's like grown in a lab by these mad scientists that do this.
And I think that she has a persona that is kind of unsavory to me as a third wave feminist trying to raise a daughter that like isn't obsessed with boys. Because every song is about boys.
I also was surprised by how blue some of the jokes were. She has lyrics that are like sexual puns that
that's her whole vibe.
I bet we have really good camaraderie. Yeah. I was like, wow, Sabrina, aren't you like 14? I know she's not.
No,
but
it's all double entendre, everything. Yeah. And that's, it seems like, I get it. That was cute at first, but then like, imagine you're in a car with a bunch of 12-year-old girls and they're singing these songs and you're like, okay, like what does Bed Chem
mean?
She's
like, who's Leonard Cohen and why should I jack off to him?
Right.
Or whatever. What is that lyric? Something like that,
and
right?
It's just like, the more I am exposed to her, I feel like she is so talented and she has a great voice, and she's like a smart lyricist. Like, she's a good writer. I think she can drop the gimmick of being like sexy, because she doesn't need to be sexy to be successful. But she's really fallen into that lane. Like, her concerts, I have a pretty low threshold of what like is appropriate media for my child. I wouldn't take my kid to a Sabrina Carpenter concert, because it's her like simulating sex acts on stage, and like she's dressed like every song is about trying to bed a boy. And
maybe it's just the like, recency bias, because recently I listened to our episode on Miley Cyrus. Is she in that phase of her career? We talked about how Miley had a phase where the media was obsessed with, oh, she's doing this risque stuff. Is she in the, I'm trying to break away from the Disney, so I have to be amplified? Or you think it's
maybe
different?
I mean, it feels different to me. It doesn't feel, I mean, it's tricky, because in one part of my brain, I want to say like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with being sexy. There's nothing wrong with being overt with going after what you want and like using words to express that. But it's also the mother part of my brain is just like, ooh, like you're so talented. Like, you don't have to do that. Right. And I feel like she's being exploited in a way, but she's also playing the game. And I don't know. I have complicated feelings about Sabrina Carpenter. Sure. I do feel like she's been put into this pop machine in a way that doesn't feel hugely genuine to me, especially knowing her older albums, because they were more genuine feeling. This feels overproduced to
me. Right, so I definitely don't know any of that stuff. I will say, as wild as all the crazy stuff happening on the Chapel Roan album, that feels more real.
Yes.
And it's hard to put your finger on why. There's something about the voice.
It just feels more authentic.
The voice. Now, aside from the sort of ribald humor or whatever, I feel like the personality doesn't project quite as clearly on this album. Though I will say, I did highlight some, there are some lines that are like, lie to girls, just the chorus of that. You don't have to lie to girls. If they like you, they'll just lie to themselves. That's a really like good line. Like,
yeah,
it's a bummer.
It's a bummer. It's a good line unless you have, you're trying to raise you've got, a strong woman.
Yeah, that's right. But so, okay. This album is tied with Andre at plus 900.
Really?
Tied for fifth.
Wow, I thought that they'd elevate it more, because she is like, I think they're trying to boost, whoever they are trying to boost up Sabrina Carpenter.
I think the Vegas odds are set by where the money is, right?
Right.
So like fewer people are betting on her, and so they're changing the odds to try to balance their books or whatever. So I don't know, they are just the number crunchers. I don't think this is going to win.
No.
I was not having any of this context, not listening to it with my daughter. We'll talk about my daughter listening to these albums later.
Right.
But,
like, it's different.
I don't have any of that. I enjoyed.
It's good
but
music.
I haven't listened to it aside from the songs that I like. I've gone back since I heard the album and listened to it again, but I haven't listened to the whole thing more than
like
one time.
I like it. If I'm like driving in the car by myself and it comes on the radio, I'm not changing it. Like, they're good songs, and they're good songs like even the 100th time I've heard them. It's just that other layer for me that I think she's doing too much. I just think she, for me, because she doesn't need to, because she's super talented.
Speaking of someone who controls her destiny and visual aesthetic a little more, next album from the folks from random.org, Billie Eilish, Hit Me Hard and Soft.
Yeah.
This is not her first nomination. She won for When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? Which, by the way, listeners,
love that.
You haven't heard it yet. We have a Billie Eilish episode where we will talk more about this later that you'll hear soon. And Happier Than Ever, nominated in 2022. So every one of her major albums has been nominated.
Are you a fan? Are you a Billie Eilish fan?
We do talk about that question. I definitely know the early-ish, like, Bury a Friend era stuff a lot more than, you know, there was some discourse when this album came out, like she's got the song Skinny or whatever, that like, you know, she's making statements and there's some profound and bummer things that are related to that. So I was aware of this, but like, I don't know Happier Than Ever nearly as well as I know When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? And I feel like this stylistically, remember that song Ocean Eyes that she's like 13?
Yeah.
Some of these songs are more like that than they are. She's not doing the like brooding, creepy, scare you kind of vibe in these last couple albums. It's different. All 10 of the songs on this album charted.
Yeah. No skips.
There's no skips. And I think her like regular old singles, like the real singles, so to speak, are both great. Lunch is great. Birds of a Feather. Here's Birds of a Feather for folks that haven't heard it.
I love this. You know, I can't help but compare this to Sabrina Carpenter's album because, yeah, she's talking about kind of real stuff too, and about love and affection, especially in Lunch. She's talking about like romance in a way that is vulgar in some,
sure,
right? But it doesn't read as vulgar to me. It reads as artistic. And I think I'm going to move on from Sabrina Carpenter in just a minute, but I feel like Sabrina's playing more towards the vulgarity and Billie Eilish is playing more towards the artistry and expression and like catharsis. And
Billie also loaded like the deck that with several years of like, I'm not playing to your camera game,
right,
kind of lifestyle as a musician that maybe Sabrina Carpenter wasn't free to be able to do,
and maybe
as a part of her machine.
And maybe Sabrina's realized that like, oh, actually that works.
Yeah.
If I play to what you want me to be. Like that's
maybe
working.
It would work for Billie too. She's doing fine without it, though.
She's doing fine, right, without it. I tried to get tickets like to her concert. Forget it. They were so expensive.
But you would.
Oh, I
if
would.
If you were rich, yes.
If
okay.
I was rich, yeah.
Folks, get your friends to listen. We need better ads so Nicole can
maybe
take
should
her.
We sell merch? Should we get merch? I don't know. Just a thought.
The Greatest is maybe my favorite song on the album. Maybe The Greatest. It's a beautiful ballad, but it has this explosive sort of power ballad ending. In 8/8 time.
Hmm.
Yes. And it's
eight.
Yes, I know 8 and 8 could just be 4/4, but it's 3+3+2. It's just such a cool epic ending. We talked a bit about pretentiousness. This song does have two like multi-section suites at the end. Bittersweet and Blue. Blue is the stronger of those. Blue has some great lines. You were born bluer than a butterfly, beautiful and so deprived of oxygen, colder than your father's eyes. He never learned to sympathize with anyone. Those moments aren't my favorite moments. That lyrical moment was one of my favorites, but just these standalone songs. This is a good album.
It's a good album. It takes you like on an emotional journey more than any of the other. Well, more than all but one of the other albums did for me. And I really just like that. Like the Chapel Rowan was fun, but this is like powerful in a way that really resonates with the style of music that I'm into. And I'm
Betty Markets. This is +550, which is tied for second with Chapel Rowan.
Yeah.
So I don't think this is going to win.
No.
I think this is very good. I don't think it's going to win. So
has
I'm
she
not
ever
buying.
Won? Has she ever won?
She won for When We All Fall Asleep, her first album.
Yeah.
Her first major album, at least.
Right.
I think it's good. I don't have a lot more to say with it. I think there's just good songs. She's a good songwriter. Phineas, shout out to Phineas. He's a good producer.
Yeah.
Big brother.
Yeah.
Why isn't my big brother a big, good producer for my music? Come on, man.
Come on. Get it together.
Get it together. I don't think he listens to this podcast.
What
so he'll
jerk.
Never.
I don't think my sister listens either. My mom can't figure out how to listen.
Yeah, she's lost and
she's
distracted on Facebook.
She's like, I'm proud
algorithm.
Of you. Yeah. No, she doesn't know how to like actually.
They like the idea of it. Okay.
Yeah.
All almost right. done here. Charlie XCX.
All right.
So I honestly don't know her very well. I knew her mostly as the person from Fancy.
Okay, yeah. Well,
and, so, you know, she's got Boom Clap and some songs that you'd
she's
hear.
She's good.
But I never had ever heard an album by her or anything. Well, I am confident now XCX is not a Roman numeral.
No.
It's just XCX.
XCX.
It wouldn't make sense
say.
As a Roman numeral.
I was talking to one of my classes about Charlie XCX, and I, like, couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't, like, say their name. They were like, Professor, it's XCX. I was like, what are you talking? I was like, I can't.
XDX.
I couldn't like make it happen.
Did you know this album or did you first become aware of this really
Brett Summer
and like the Kamala Harris campaign and all that?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I like Charlie XCX. I respect her as a musician, but I'm not like super familiar. I'm not like a fan, but I don't hate it.
I think this is probably the one album of this list that I would say is sort of just not for me. I'm not the target. Mm. And I know I'm not the target demographic for any of these, really, except for maybe Andres.
No, probably Sabrina Carpenter, too.
right. Me, the tween girl. But, you know, this is sort of Euro, ravey.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite type of dance music anyway. So it's just sort of, it's harder to grab me just from, whereas you know how to put a quasi disco beat or a sort of synth pop beat and you know that I'm just down, or you put vocal harmonies in Jacob Collier and I'm down, or in Cowboy Carter.
If there's some like recitative or something in it, you're like very
recitative would be weird in these albums. Song highlights for me, I would say the strongest single is probably Apple. That's probably my favorite one. Nice beat, cool hook. Talk Talk has cool like syncopation. I'd say probably the most beautiful song is So I. That sequence there makes it feel like songs you've heard 50,000 times. But yeah. It's very pretty. I kind of like the weird stuff. She's doing some jumping around into different octaves, weird chords. This song kind of reminded me of Imogen Heap. Do you know Imogen Heap?
I do. I've just recently been exposed. One of my favorite students just told me to listen to Imogen Heap.
She's really good. And this song, I think about it all the time, kind of reminds me of that. I think about it all the time. Then I might run out of time.
I love that.
That's pretty cool. Like, I think a lot of it is less weird than that, but when she was doing the unusual, you know, the rewind effects and rewind, like, those moments grabbed me as being effective. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't have much to add, unfortunately. Brat Summer, I don't think she's going to win. Yeah, I like her as an artist. She's going to be around for a long time. Like, you know that she's just going to keep making.
She's already been around for like a decade. That's what's wild.
And like, but has a real fan base.
Yeah.
That's not us.
Good for her. Not us. Yeah. This one's tied for fifth with Andre and Sabrina Carpenter. I think there are some lyrics. I think the lyrics in Apple are grabbing. I guess the apple could turn yellow or green. I know there's lots of different nuances to you and to me. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
I have to point out before we move on, this album that we're sort of both shrugging on is, according to Metacritic, the 16th highest rated album of all time.
All time.
So I have a little game for you. This is the 16th. Now, this is not, if you told me this was Rotten Tomatoes, where it's just thumb up or thumb down and you do an average, I'd be like, yeah, I believe that every critic would give this. I give this album a thumb up. I don't give it a thumb down. But Metacritic means actually it had high, like, 5 out of 5s. I have a game for you.
Okay.
Is this album higher or lower rated than Brat? The rating on Metacritic is 95 out of 100.
Who is ranked higher?
Who is ranked better, basically?
Better. Right?
The Strokes, Is This It from 2001.
Brat is ranked better.
Strokes has a 91. It's ranked 68th. That's a good album, by the way, though.
Mm-hmm.
Kanye West, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy from 2010.
Brat is ranked better.
Correct.
Yeah. That's all going to be.
Kanye got 94. Right behind, it's ranked 18th, Kanye. Fiona Apple, Fetch the Bolt Cutters from 2020.
I know that this was ranked higher than Brat Summer, because they said that this was like one of the best albums in the past 10 years.
98 out of 100.
It's a great album.
It's ranked 2.
Yeah, I remember that stood out to me to like mention to you one day, because we talk about Fiona Apple sometimes.
Yeah.
She worked really hard on that album. It's a great album.
That is a great album.
Mm-hmm.
Got some unusual, surprising things on it. Super good lyrics. Frank Ocean's Channel Orange from 2012.
That's ranked higher than Brat.
False. 92 out of 100. 41st. It's an iconic album.
Oh, yeah.
Taylor Swift, 1989. Specifically Taylor's version, which is the higher ranked of the versions. 2023. / 2014 when the original. Higher or lower than Brat? Which is better? Not which is better, which is ranked higher.
Ranked higher. I bet you it's ranked higher, 1989.
Or 90 out of 100.
Oh, gosh, 78th. Huh?
Beyonce, Lemonade.
Higher than Brat.
92, ranked 31st. Brat beats it. Fleet Foxes, Helplessness Blues.
Lower than Brat.
Way lower than Brat. 85, it's 700th. I like that album, though. Do you
love
that album?
Yeah, I like Fleet Foxes. Have you ever seen them live?
I have not.
They're good.
Flex. I like them a lot, though.
Yeah.
Kendrick Lamar, To Pimp a Butterfly, 2015.
That's ranked higher than Brat.
Correct. 96 out of 100, ranked 5th.
Because that was his, like, breakout album, right?
I would say Good Kid, Mad City is his breakout. But I think Pimp a Butterfly is the critical darling in a way. Like, I don't know. They're both really good, though. Okay. Wadonda Leo Smith, 10 Freedom Summers from 2012.
I don't even know who that is, so I'm going to say it's ranked higher because you wouldn't have mentioned it if it wasn't.
Good logic. It is 99 out of 100. It is the number one ranked song of all time on Metacritic. I have no idea what that is.
Wow.
Outkast, Speaker Box, The Love Below, 2003. We've already talked about it.
I say that's ranked higher than Brat.
So top 15. Yeah. 91 out of 100. It's 49th. Not even the highest Outkast. Stankonia is higher than Speaker Box, which surprises me. So isn't that wild?
What's the number one album on that list? Number one thing?
Wodonda Leo Smith's 10 Freedom Summers, which is like the only one on that list that neither of us know. It just must
Weird.
Be so good.
I'm adding it to the list for season
I think it's
two.
A little crazy that this is number 16. Because all those other albums, I'm like, oh yeah, that's like an important album. Maybe not Fleet Foxes, but I chose that one to represent the 700th place. All right.
I like when you say the word important.
Important?
You say it like you're really like, you have intention. Important.
So I will say the little things in a relationship. Shout out to my wife. She has influenced the way I say that word over the many years we've been together. Okay,
important.
Here we are. Randomly, random.org put Taylor Swift, Tortured Poets Department, from 2024 as the last song we
now
discussed.
This is an important point.
Yes.
Is it the anthology or like the first, is it the double album?
Oh my, I think, and this is where, okay, we got in trouble when our Outkast episode came out.
Yeah.
And we talked about
double albums
and how there aren't a lot of double albums. People reached out like, what are you talking about? What about the new Taylor album? I did not think of this as a double album. I thought of this because it's called anthology. I thought of this as Taylor does this. She's got Folklore, but then there's the like the vault recordings that are like an extra.
That's not what this was.
So I'll be honest. I I definitely had heard this album.
Yes.
Before
all of it.
This adventure.
All like 200 songs.
I had not listened to the second half part until this adventure.
Black Dog is the best song. Cassandra's a great song. There's a lot of good songs on that second
part.
So
the weird thing is I didn't
Fuck You Amy.
That's a really good one. So I didn't know that counted, that this was a double album. Mm-hmm. I thought this was an album and then she surprised us all with bonus tracks, and I just sort of listening. My daughter is younger than yours, so she's not Sabrina Carpenter-ing it, but we're definitely doing Taylor.
Nice.
So the funny thing is, so we first of all only heard the first album up until this point, but also she's in a phase right now. She's gonna listen to this one day and hate me, but like she'll want to skip it if she sees that it has the explicit tag.
Oh, sure. Well, Taylor released like a clean version of the whole anthology.
So I don't have the clean one on the playlist on Apple Music.
It's
maybe
not
I should.
Good, but like whatever.
But like, so there are first few songs on this, even on the main disc, that I'd never heard because she's just like, skip it.
And my son's rolling. I mean, this was an album, you know, you can see how like my voice is changing and talking about Taylor Swift. Like now this is my time to shine. But this is an album that she's swearing a lot more. It is more explicit than her other albums.
It starts happening in the last probably four. Mm. Can we just say, by the way, to set the pace, Fearless won in 2010. Red was nominated in 2014.
Red's a great album.
Agreed. 1989 won in 2016, which to me, that album came out in 14. How is that on that? That's just weird. Folklore won in 2021.
That's my favorite.
I know that's your favorite. Evermore was nominated in 2022. And Midnight's won in 2024.
Midnight's is very, very good as well. It got outshined with the Eras Tour starting, but like...
Okay, so I think we are... talking about the full double album.
Okay.
This is a double album.
Yep.
Even though I didn't know that and we didn't mention it. We recorded the Outkast episode before this album had come out or just didn't realize it was a double album.
Also,
she dropped it like immediately.
She did. And we also had kind of a pact when we first started recording that we weren't going to talk about Taylor Swift. because it was like, yeah, there's the fan base was just too, who knows what could happen if you say the wrong thing with the Swifties.
We've eased it in now that I feel comfortable.
And now
we
like,
haven't been assassinated
yet. We haven't been assassinated yet. And I think at the time of recording that Outcast, we knew that this was a double album, but we're like biting our tongues.
Did.
Yes,
you did.
I did. But we had said like, we're not going to mention Taylor Swift because we don't want to get assaulted by the Swifties for saying the wrong thing. But now turns out the cat's out of the bag. And like, we're all in.
All right. So I have a lot of complicated thoughts about this. I'm going to let you talk because I think you seem to love this song, this album.
I like, there's a lot of this album that I love. You know, there's so much to talk about. The single Fortnite, and then she later released I Can Do It With a Broken Heart as a single too, I think are both great. I like You Can Do It With a Broken Heart better. When I first heard that song, it was like an anthem for a lot of us. Like
I love Fortnite. Fortnite is such a good song. I think they underuse Post Malone a little bit, but I think that's a great, beautiful song.
I really liked So Long London. I like feel a tightness in my chest when I listen to that song. Like the fact that her voice like echoes the London bells at the beginning, the fact that there's like a heartbeat layered on top of it all or under it all. It like feels so powerful and constricting, and her vocal delivery is really tight in a way that like gives me the feeling of being trapped, and that's how trapped and releasing all at the same time. It was just a really lovely song. I like so many. Down Bad is a great song too. And when I first was like, oh, what's Down Bad about? Like, and then she talks about it, and she's like, oh no, it's about being abducted by aliens. I was like, oh, I thought that was a metaphor, but I guess like it's it's not. It's actually about that. And I really like Clara Bow is one of my favorite songs on that.
Clara Bow might be the best.
Just because it's so meta.
Hey, this town is fake, but you're the real thing. Breath of fresh air through smoke rings. Take the glory, give everything. Promise to be dazzling. The crumb is...
It's meta.
Well, because she talks, it's about her kind of coming up through the music industry. And then at the end, she says, you know, you look just like Taylor Swift, but you have edge she never did. It's like referencing the music industry's interpretation of her. And a lot of, almost all of her albums were about, it's all autobiographical with the exception Folklore, not so much. But I noticed a lot of... Obviously, in all her albums, it's like nods to relationships. But this album, for me, was about her relationship to us as fans. And that's what... there were a lot of threads of that, especially I Can Do It With a Broken Heart. And then this nod in Clara Bow. It's like how we view her, right? And then in But Daddy, I Love Him, she has the line, like, I'm having his baby. No, I'm not. But you should see your faces. She's like laughing at us for speculating about her life. So I really looked at this album through the lens of, okay, now we're the relationship she's trying to process. It's her relationship with us as her fandom. But maybe I'm overthinking it. What else is new? Me overthinking it. But I'm wondering if you picked up on any of that tone. And that's only the first album. There's the whole second one.
No, so I'm not really good at following. I don't know her love life or whatever. Like, it takes me 14 listens to Fortnite before I'm like, oh, okay, this is like Jilted Lover. She's why does she want to kill her? No. Okay, she's watering the flowers.
You'll save yourself a lot of time whenever you listen to Taylor Swift. You start there. Like, this is Jilted Lover.
Start with the Jilted Lover, yeah.
And just...
So, okay, so this album, I went on a journey with this album, right?
Yeah, because everyone did, Mark.
Because there's like the listening to just a few times, just the first part.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of having my own judgment on that and then adding the second one and that informing it and then kind of changing my mind. I don't know. I'm still changing my mind.
A lot of people felt that way about this album. Even I'll say like the first time I listened to it, I did not like it. Like not one bit. I was like, it should have been Reputation. I don't want new music. Like, no.
Wait, should have been Reputation?
Yeah. So she hasn't released Taylor's version of Reputation or the debut album yet. And a lot of Swifties are like... very much clowning about when is she going to release Reputation. Like, and we thought that when she was going to release her next album, it would have been her version of Reputation. And instead, she surprised us by releasing an anthology
yeah,
of so, new music. Okay, like, so, when did she even write it? She was on tour. When did she even write this stuff? It's crazy.
Wild. So it's wild. I have to say, like, I'll start with the sort of negatives, essentially. Mm. Like, this album definitely has a vibe. It feels like a direct continuation of the sort of sound world of Midnights, mm-hmm. in the way that Evermore and Folklore are kind of one sound world to yeah. me, with sort of a morphing, but basically that sort of verbed out kind of folky mm-hmm. piano or guitar songs. I think, though, there's just been a lot. There's just mm-hmm. been a lot of Taylor content in the last 5 years. Yeah. And especially the first couple times I heard just the, before I kind I feel like I understood it more once I added the second half.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm just kind of like, I don't know that I needed new Taylor Swift music. And this is a guy who I have not heard the basement cuts of Evermore or whatever.
And that's right? what a lot of Swifties were thinking when it's like, we don't need a new, we need yeah. the re-record of that, of Rep, right?
That's really interesting. So yeah. you mentioned Reputation. I feel like Reputation is a very divisive album itself.
Yeah.
You're saying people are clamoring for it, but I feel like there's a lot of people who probably don't love Reputation, certainly.
Yeah, it's not my favorite.
But I would say about Reputation, like, as much as I, like, the first time I heard Look What You Made Me Do, I'm like, what the heck is this? However, that song is a wild swing.
Mm.
That song is a wild swing. Like, she's doing this weird, dancey kind of song. And I feel like the main vibe of this album is not really leaving any room for wild swings.
No.
I feel like there aren't a lot of risks taken, certainly in the first half. There are a few exceptions to this sort of, I don't know, I feel like overall it's kind of got a Karma vibe. Like that sort of pulsing synth pop. I like that song. I already said I really like Fortnite. I think Clara Bow is one of the exceptions. It's more emotional. I think But Dada, I Love Him, you mentioned that. That song feels kind of like Speak Now. Or yeah. Fearless era, which is cool. Florida with Florence Welch in it. Sort of like, I love the Redneck Riviera references to Destin and stuff like that. There's some homages to earlier eras, but it kind of feels like Midnightsy to me.
Mm.
And, you know, we have a little few moments of intensity. The Who's Afraid of Little Old Me shout.
That's a great song,
really
too.
Good moment.
Ugh, and, so
you know,
good.
Some of these lyrics, some great breakup song, The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived.
Yeah, so
you hung me on your wall, stabbed me with your pushpins. You know, some of these lines.
So good.
But then I heard the second half.
Yeah.
And it kind of changed my mind, but then also kind of confused me because at first it sounded kind of random to me.
Mm.
Like if we I feel like there's two ways we view this as a double album in relation to whether it's an album of the year, you know, deserving record. So it's either a double album that doesn't quite hang together.
Yeah.
Because the second half feels kind of like the sequel to Evermore to me.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the first one feels like a sequel to Midnights. Or, and this is what started to change my mind. This album is the period at the end of the paragraph, the summary of the last 5 year content dump that Taylor Swift has given
us. I think that that's what it is. It seems more for her to get it out of her head than for us. And
yeah,
it's, I kind of like that, but I'll say hot take. I don't think this needed to be a double album. I think that you could have cut it and then released it as vault tracks. Or like extra content tracks.
The second disc or
some of the second disc.
Recombine into
them.
One.
Yeah.
Because the second song has, so Thank You, Amy. Like,
it's, yeah, that's a great song.
This song harkens back to an earlier era with the acoustic instruments, but it's also like all reverby as heck, yeah, like Evermore is. All that time you were throwing punches, it was all for nothing.
And our town, it looks so small from way up. You know, that's a Kim Kardashian diss track, right?
I did not know that.
Oh, my God, Mark.
I don't know anything about this stuff.
Okay.
Why is she doing a Kim Kardashian diss track?
Oh, my gosh, Mark. Okay.
I mean, I know the beef with Kanye, but that's also so 7 years ago.
No, I know, but she's processing it, right? So now she, Reputation was like processing all that.
Sure.
And even like, if you look at the title of Thank You, Amy, she's capitalizing K-I-M in the title,
yeah.
right? And
yeah,
then,
yeah. It's not a typo.
And it's all this whole thing that, like, you know, yes, I hated you for how you made me feel, but without that feeling, I wouldn't have been able to overcome and like move on and produce great music. And like, I wouldn't have anything to grow from without the challenges you presented to me. And even there's a line in Thank You, Amy, that's like, your daughter, I'm going to paraphrase the line, but saying like, your daughter came home and she's dancing to a song that only you and I know that I wrote about you.
I thought it was Jilted Lover.
No, because, buckle up, Mark, because when, you know, Kim Kardashian has North, the daughter, Northwest. Okay. They posted like a TikTok of Kim and North dancing to Shake It Off and like in a cute mother-daughter moment. But Shake It Off was a song Taylor Swift wrote in reference to Kanye and
the
Kim,
haters hating,
like,
yeah,
the haters hating. Kanye, yeah. So it's like, you know, in that song, it's a direct call out to Kim Kardashian. Like, your daughter comes home from school and you dance to a song that only you and I know I wrote about you.
Yeah.
It's like, not even like veiled. Okay. Right. It's just an obtuse diss track. And then later, but I think that, you know, the song is about growing from adversity, right? And like thanking the people that pushed you down because they made you who you are today. But yeah, man.
Okay, so there's some really, really good songs on this second half too. I am troubled by this because either it doesn't quite hang together as a double album, or it's this wonderful summation of this era that maybe she can move on from.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the matter at hand, does this deserve Record of the Year? When I first had that interpretation, maybe this is a good summation, I went, that makes it totally deserved. This is like the Lord of the Rings Return of the King winning Best Picture as an acknowledgement, not of that movie being the best, but the whole project of doing three movies. And that logic is great, except Folklore won, Midnights won. Those albums have already been celebrated. That it feels like double dipping somehow to give this album of the year.
I get what you're saying. You feel like this is so derivative from Folklore and Midnights that there's...
She's like reflecting on her own records here in a way that...
Oh, I don't see it that way.
So, well, and my interpretation of her intent is not nearly as well informed as you. I'm thinking more just like as a person in this music space, like a consumer of 2024. So this is the front runner, right? This is the betting odds have it at -275. I think there's a good chance it will win, even though this album was kind of divisive, especially at first. But I just feel like the reason why the third Lord of the Rings movie deserved to win is because the first two didn't win.
Sure.
And because I don't think Return of the King is generally thought of as the best one. But it's like, oh my God, this guy made these three banger movies in 3 years or whatever. Let's... And there's something that...
And they do that a lot when it's like the last season of a show that never won but was always nominated.
Sure.
They'll like give it to that show.
If you told me this was the Beyonce scenario where she'd been nominated and never won, I'd be like, this is it. Because not only is this a pretty good album, but it's summarizing the last 5 years of Taylor's life and all of our lives through Taylor. But I like feel like that's less necessary because those individual moments, Folklore of Evermore arc might be the more successful of those two. And Midnights versus the first half of this, Midnights is probably the better album of those two. So it's sort of like, is this a great achievement? I don't think I want this to win over Cowboy Carter or over Chapel Roan, for example.
I don't want this to win over Billie Eilish or Chapel Roan.
Yeah, I think Billie Eilish too. I think I would put that above this.
And I think I definitely see your point. Like it's not like we need to celebrate Taylor Swift.
Like she's been celebrated enough.
So you mentioned that this has like Folklore Midnights vibes to it. Do you know that fans speculate that there's a lost Taylor Swift album?
How does she write songs so
prolifically?
It's wild.
She writes it
like her job because it's her job.
Yeah.
That's wild if that's true.
There's a speculation that Swift was planning to release an album called Karma in 2016.
Okay.
After 1989. But then scrapped it.
She got mad. Yeah, Reputation.
And then released Reputation instead.
Which is super different.
So she follows like a 2 year release pattern that every 2 years she releases a new album and it like skips a year for Reputation. So it went from 1989 and 2014. Then 2016 should have been Karma, this lost album. But she like went into hiding, whatever. and then released Reputation in 2017. So a lot of fans think that some of the content from this was like stuff iterated from Karma, but a lot of folks are like, where's that album too?
I would believe that, because some of these songs feel disjointed in time.
Right.
They have a similar vibe to the albums I've been referring to, but not consistently.
Mm-hmm. It seems like a brain dump for her.
And I think that's really important to do.
Yeah.
I think I'm glad she did it. I enjoyed listening to it once I heard both. I think I didn't get it at first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that that's album of the year, though. So, but it's her and she's the most important star right now. So I kind of get.
Yeah.
Why?
I think she'll win for single. I think Fortnite will win for collaboration or pop duo or whatever that category is.
Okay. On that note,
okay,
we got to wrap. This is.
We've been talking a lot. So.
Two things, okay, real quick.
Yes.
Record of the year and song of the year this year.
Okay.
Okay? So I only recently learned what the heck the difference
what
between those
the
are.
Difference?
So it actually makes perfect sense, though. Record of the year is for the recording and the performance, okay. Song of the year is for the songwriting,
an album is for the. CD.
So
I'm sorry,
I think why we're so confused by this is because in our generation, we came up with either rock bands who wrote their own songs or singer-songwriters who write their own songs. But if you think like when these awards first invented, like the late 50s or whatever we said the first one is, that would be like some Elvis song winning record of the year, but some songwriter in a building in Tin Pan Alley in New York City would win Song of the Year. The songwriter wins. And it just happens to be Taylor Swift is both.
Both. And I get confused because I think of album and record as synonyms, but they're not in this context.
Record means like recording. A single.
Okay. A single. Okay.
But it's not a record like an album, but it's also not a song, because if we're looking at, so like Fortnite is nominated for both. Fortnite, when I'm thinking of the Song of the Year nomination, I'm thinking of the songwriting. The lyrics, the chords, the melody.
And Taylor Swift and Post Malone wrote that song.
With other people, too.
Okay.
But when I'm thinking of Record of the Year nomination for Fortnite, I'm thinking of their performance of it, the production of it.
Okay.
Because the performer and the producers will win that award. So that's two songs I feel like we have to think of in two different ways.
Oh, gosh. It's hard parse that out. I think for Fortnite,
well,
given what you said, I don't think it's the Song of the Year, but I think it might be the Record of the Year. Like, the production of it is great, but I don't think, like, the songwriting is the best.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I don't know who else
let's go through the list.
But, yeah.
So, Record of the Year nominations.
Mm-hmm.
Now and Then by the Beatles.
All right.
It's an achievement, but how good is it really?
I don't know.
It's the medium as Beatles song, right? Texas Hold'em, Beyonce. Already talked about it. Not my favorite song on the album, but a good one.
Yeah.
Espresso, Sabrina Carpenter. Good song. 360, Charlie XCX. We didn't talk about that one. Not one of my favorites on that album, but single. This is Record of the Year. So we're thinking like vibe, performance, recording, right?
Okay.
Birds of a Feather, Billie Eilish.
I think that should win.
Not Like Us. We have not talked about this at all.
Kendrick Lamar.
This is probably the diss track against Drake.
Sure.
And listeners, we've got a Drake episode upcoming.
Gosh, I can't get, don't get me started.
And that one was before these diss tracks, so we kind of don't talk about it anyway.
There's a lot of foreshadowing, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of foreshadowing. We do talk about it. So this has some pretty good diss lines.
Yeah.
The whole A minor thing. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So this song is hip hop, too. It's not pop like the rest of this. Good Luck Babe from Chapel Roan, which was the one that I knew I had heard.
Yeah.
But also not on that album, right? It came out after.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fortnite by Taylor. So if we think of this as performance and production, who wins for you?
Chapel Roan or Kendrick?
I think Chapel Roan or Kendrick.
Yeah.
I think Not Like Us or Good Luck Babe. Maybe Texas Hold'em.
I would put Texas Hold'em as song.
Songwriting?
It's like the way that song's written is
really
like
smart.
It's really smart.
Yeah.
And like a way that like modernizes the lyrical motifs of that style. I just really think that that's a great song.
All right, so Song of the Year, a bar song, Tipsy by Shaboozey.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so nice song, massive hit.
Yeah.
Birds of a Feather, Billy and Phineas co-wrote that. Die with a Smile by Lady Gaga and Bruno Mars. I didn't know this, but it's good.
It's very good. Yeah, my daughter's been singing it nonstop, so.
Fortnite, Taylor and Post and others.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about it. Good Luck Babe. Chapel Roan wrote it with others.
Mm.
Not Like Us. Kendrick wrote it with others.
Yeah.
Please, please, please. Sabrina Carpenter. This is good. I also, not one of my favorite songs by her.
No.
Texas Hold'em. I really think the song's production is so good, but who are your winners on this one?
Well, I have an, I think I'd like to see Texas Hold'em win on this one.
Yeah.
But I also need to just go back and talk about Please, Please, Please for a second, if you'll humor me.
Okay.
Because it goes back to our radio edit episode.
Yeah.
That there's a lot of different edits of this song.
Wow.
And they're
okay.
Funny. So she goes, there's a line like, don't you embarrass me, mother effer.
Okay.
And
And
she got into kind of hot water with people that are like Karens that said like, hey, my kid's like singing mother effer and I don't want it to. So she had a radio edit that she changed it to don't you embarrass me, little sucker, which isn't as good.
My.
And then there's a Kidz Bop version.
Oh, no.
You know, and it's don't you embarrass me or my mother.
Or my mother. You know, and that's
so
strangely
funny.
Closer to the original.
And so I just had to like call back to that.
I don't think that one wins this, though.
No, I don't think so.
I was thinking Die With a Smile, the Gaga and Bruno song. That's
it's
a good song.
It is a good song.
Fortnite is a good song. I know you're saying production, but because it's so vibey.
Mm.
Texas Hold'em could be, I think, the, one of those three.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Do you think we've talked about the Grammys enough?
I think that we did it.
Longest sidetrack of all time, maybe.
Well,
all
I hope you enjoyed.
We'll have to circle back and see how right or wrong we were.
We're always right. Nevermind the Music is hosted by me, Nicole Vatcher, and Mark Papany. Mark also produces our podcast. Please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and review.
Let us know what you think on social media. We're Never Music Pod on all the major platforms. You can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Every so often, we'll do a mailbag episode where we'll answer your burning questions.
Thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, David here. Severance is back. The Lorehounds are partnering with Properly Howard to bring you in-depth weekly coverage of Season 2. Join me, John, Anthony, and Steve as we unpack every twist, theory, and revelation. We've created a dedicated feed just for our Severance coverage. Simply search for Severance Lorehounds in your podcast app or find the direct link in our link tree. Our weekly episodes dig deep into the show's mysteries, themes, and bigger questions about identity and consciousness that make Severance so compelling. Season Pass and regular community subscribers get ad-free access to our weekly episodes, plus exclusive content like our Supply Closet bonus series, featuring fascinating conversations with experts like the team from Nevermind the Music. We've explored the neuroscience of memory and personality, decoded the hidden meanings in the show's musical themes, and there's much more to come. You'll also get Steve and Anthony's complete Season 1 rewatch series. We believe in total transparency with our listeners. And unlike mammalians nurturable, we're happy to share all of our secrets. Find the link for the Severance feed in the show notes below, or search Severance Lorehounds wherever you get your podcasts. Come theorize with us about what's really happening at Lumen.
And remember, the episode you think you're about to hear is merely a reflection.